Start your engines and join me in the new mobile game, RuPaul's Drag Race Superstar. May the best superstar win. Available now.
In a world full of straight people, aren't you glad there's WOW Presents Plus, the number one place in the world to see Drag Race?
RuPaul's Drag Race, may the best drag queen win. Drag queen win.
And so much more. Subscribe to WOW Presents Plus. Still only $4.99. Subscribe today as streamed on TV.
I'm Matt McConkie. I'm a writer, performer, and host of this podcast about And Just Like That. But now that we've recapped both seasons of the show, I couldn't help but wonder, should I go back and cover the original Sex and the City? The answer, of course, is no, but I can't be stopped, so every week I'll be joined by my very own Mirandas and Charlottes to unpack an episode or movie of their choosing. We're doing Sex and the City Roulette with extra Samantha and none of the Che. And just like Matt, welcome to the show. Folks, as you know, we're going to be jumping all over Sex and the City in no particular order, quantum leaping across different episodes, different seasons. But today we are going back to the beginning. We're going to be discussing the pilot. So here is HBO's synopsis for Sex and the City Season 1, Episode 1, which is called Sex and the City. New York City sex columnist Carrie Bradshaw and her friends vow to stop worrying about finding the perfect mate and start having sex like men. Carrie meets Mr. Big, Miranda warms up to Skipper, and Samantha has a one-night stand with a man Charlotte wouldn't sleep with on the first date. So much to process here, but I will tell you my epiphany, and that is that some of us are Carries, some of us are Mirandas, and some of us are Jessicas. And today I'm joined by two of them. First up, she's a writer-performer. She has served as a consulting producer on three seasons of Hacks. And she is, of course, the iconic Rana of the Ask Rana podcast, Jessica Chaffin. Hello.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here. Matt, it's lovely to see your beautiful face.
It's so happy.
Can I still compliment men on their faces?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I was talking about how upset I was that we're not using the Zoom today because I always have the filter turned all the way up and we're on Riverside. You're faced with a more realistic me, unfortunately. Anyway, moving along to another beautiful face. She is a TV writer and producer. She's written on Rick and Morty, Silicon Valley. She created and executive produced She-Hulk, Attorney at Law. Jessica Gao, welcome.
Hello. So happy for this Jessica representation, finally.
Finally.
And you have to understand that these Jessicas, in some ways, started their journey in this town together. My very first writing job that I ever had was also Jessica Gao's very first writing job.
And is that right?
We met and fell in love and formed the band The Jessicas on that show.
What show was it?
For Amy Poehler's Mighty Bee on Nickelodeon.
Oh.
Jessica has obviously gone on to much, you know, bigger and better things. And, you know, I'm working on that slouchy Max program, Hacks, that I was watching. But really, it was a real, I would say it was a little, well, it was love at first sight for Jessica.
Yes.
Which Jessica, I can't say.
And then the other Jessica took a little time to warm up.
Gao did say to me when I told her that she was going to be on with you, she was like, you're going to see the rare. I mean, I know Gao also from working with her, and I know her as, more of a dominant energy, I guess. And she was like, you're about to see the rare instance in a dynamic where I'm the submissive beta. And I was like, baby, let's go.
No, it's just alpha and baby alpha. It's not, there's no beta here. It's just a couple of alphas. And then like, you know, it just so happened that she was younger. So she needed a little bit more alpha training, but I like to think that I helped polish the diamond that we see before us. And I don't mean in terms of her talent in any way. I just mean in terms of her shopping and her, those kind of habits.
Yeah.
There's nothing I could do to help Jessica improve in any way as an artist, just as a shopping artist. As a lifestyle artist.
I was raw predator material and she turned me into an apex predator.
But she knew she wanted the knowledge. She knew.
That's right.
She was like, tell me what you have to give and let's go buy expensive soap together or whatever.
You created such a monster. I coined a term when we were working on Bajillion Dollar Properties. It's a mantra, and it's how to gal. And it's just sort of like, because she is someone who knows how to live, especially from like a consumerism point of view. But in general, it's like she does have an answer to everything. She's always got a guy, but that also applies to you, Chaffin.
But that's because
But Gao actually innately has it all figured out much more than, she's much more of a grown-up than me, which people would be surprised to hear. But she is much more fiscally responsible. And, you know, it's funny though, because I was watching this, not to go, but this did occur to me as I was watching the pilot, and I was like, oh, fuck, I'm a Miranda? I spent my 20s and 30s, if a man dared talk to me, being like, what? You know what I mean? Like, and we could spend the next 20 years trying to unpack why that was. But just watching her talk to what's his name? Skipper is Skippy or Skippinger or whatever his name was. In the bar, I was like, oh my God. Like I was having like PTSD about that's how it must have been to have a drink with me in a bar on Hudson and West 14th in like 1998 or whatever year. But I'm so curious who Gao identifies with, not who she wants to be, but who she actually is.
Yeah. Well, she's coming into this.
This is the sorting hat before the sorting hat. Yeah. Let's just get
that. Yeah, of course. Yeah. And she's coming in with very fresh eyes. Gao, am I right that this is the first episode of Sex and the City you have ever seen?
Yeah. I am a psycho who has never watched the show, but I did watch the movie. And
so strange.
I know, it's crazy. But also, but I do feel like through like cultural osmosis, I just know so much about the show that it wasn't like I was lost, you know, like you just couldn't escape it. And everybody talks. So I knew who all the characters were. I knew what the personality types were, just as I feel like most people probably know the Harry Potter houses, even if they're not Harry Potter fans, you know. And I caught like snippets of episodes because sometimes, you know, I'd flip onto HBO and then maybe I'd watch like 10 minutes of an episode, like because there are some partial episodes that I do remember, like I might've watched like a few scenes or something, but this is the first like full episode of me like sitting down and watching the actual show and watching a full episode from start to finish.
And how do you feel?
I wrote down a bunch of notes, you guys.
Oh, I okay, can't, well, as we'll did into I, all I can't of them. Wait. I can't will wait. Get,
I mean, just big picture, Chaffin, what was your relationship to the original show at the time?
You know, it's funny because it's definitely my era, but I don't remember feeling, I feel like I watched every episode of it because I watched it because it was on whatever it was on, like before The Sopranos, you know, like it was on television. And, you know, you know, contrary to all the work I've had done, guys, I grew up watching television when it was on. Not when I decided it was on, and or on my phone or whatever. But I never, and I lived in New York, you know, at that time, and meaning like in that time in my life. But I don't remember feeling like it ruled me, like that it was like, oh, this is me, or I see myself reflected in this or whatever. I remember thinking it was a really fun romp. But as I said to you, Matt, I don't know if I remember one episode. And I feel like I know so many people that are like, you know, the one I remember actually is the one where she leaves her shoes outside the door to party and somebody steals her shoes. And like that just got under my skin. Like that, because that was life in New York, you know, that you're like, these shoes? Because you're like, no offense, but, you know, my mom bought me these shoes or, you know, like I'm keeping these shoes, you know, it's not like, oh, 400 pair of, you know, of Chuck Taylors or whatever. Yeah. But yeah, so I didn't have like a great library for it, but watching the pilot, like, was that interesting to be taken back to, like, to see what this thing was, what it started as, and then what it became. Yeah. And weirdly, I was thinking about Matt Perry, like just because the ubiquitousness of friends, or ubiquity, I guess is the word, of friends also, as Jess was saying, like, have I ever called you Jess?
No.
I think I've only ever called you Jessica Gao or little sister. And I'd like that to be edited out immediately. But as she was saying, it's like, you couldn't avoid it. And I feel the sort of the same way about friends, which is like, I kind of watched it maybe when I was cooking or doing homework or whatever, or when it was on, tuned in because it was fun to watch, but it didn't like, it never took me over. Like it took over some people.
It I guess
I was too busy
big.
Doing improv.
Oh boy.
Yeah. You were living.
The bowels of UCB at the time. Yeah. That's probably what I was busy doing basically.
Well, let's get into it. You know, I hadn't seen this in a long time and forgot that we open with this vignette that is not Carrie or Miranda or any of our characters. It's this little New York love story about Elizabeth and Tim, and Elizabeth has just moved here from England, even though she's Australian.
He didn't even bother casting somebody who'd do an English accent.
Didn't even bother.
She didn't even bother trying. She was like, eh.
And then it made me
that's
think
how you know, like, what were they really expecting from this show?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, even, and also just the opening, I'm so curious, because it is one of the great openings. Like, it does sort of encapsulate the whole show.
Yeah.
And stayed that way for a very long time, that opening. And you're like, oh, it's selling so much of the show, the opening. Now,
oh, yeah.
You know, shows don't really do that so much anymore, except She-Hulk.
I mean, of course, that's what my next companion podcast is about. Yeah. The guy breaks up with her from, it's like this, you know, they're falling in love. They're looking at places together. And then suddenly he ghosts her. And then we never, and I guess the sort of moral of the story is like, that's how people break up in Manhattan, baby. But I did think like, did he break up with her because she's a con artist who's pretending to be British when she's clearly Australian? The only reasonable explanation.
Yeah, took him a couple weeks to cotton on, but
I was just wildly confused. For a second I thought I clicked on the wrong show, and I was like, oh, is this the Sex and the City like prequel? Like, that's about them being young. And then I was like, wait, am I thinking about Gossip Girl now? And I actually stopped it and double checked to make sure that I clicked on the right thing. And then watched it.
I was so distracted by how the fashions are the fashions again.
Yeah,
exactly.
Like they're terrible, but like that strappy, though that shoe will thankfully, hopefully never come back when they show them doing footsie under the table. And it's like some sort of weird, like, you know, hexagonal toe with a, I mean, I don't know, maybe it already is back, but yeah, she was wearing like a strappy Prada knockoff number, and I was like, wow. And like updos, which weirdly seem to be back also.
Yeah. And do people play footsie in real life? I only see it in TV and in film.
I can't imagine what it, I watch it and I'm like, and what does it do for you? I can't like, oh, my toes are in erogenous zone. You know, I'm always like, then what? Like, I guess if the foot keeps going, you know, that we got something to talk about.
I just had a flashback to someone trying to play footsie with me and just how wrong it felt. And it was like, also like man on man footsie is not something anyone went. This guy took off his shoe at a table and there were other people there. And so he was trying to covertly sort of like Sharon Stone up my like pant leg with his like socked foot.
Oh no.
I was like, what on earth do you think is gonna happen here?
Anyone who takes off their shoe in a restaurant should go to jail immediately.
Disgusting.
It's terrible.
I couldn't agree more.
By the way,
but you like, both go full barefoot on planes, right?
I only fly in flip flops, everyone knows that.
And Gal controls the screen with her toes.
Oh yes, that's how I swipe.
Well, she can. She can but.
with my prehensile feet. By the way, just overall, like watching this like pilot to me felt like watching Iron Man 1 for someone who's never watched like Marvel movies, but for some reason like only watched Endgame. It was very weird. Like starting off and just being like, oh, this is the stuff everyone's been talking about for however many years. And like, but also feeling like I'm watching the origin story of all these characters that have like evolved.
Yes. Well, and it gave me the creeps too, because first thing I want to say is, are you contractually obligated to make all comparisons to Marvel properties? That's the first question I have. I wouldn't be surprised if that's in the 400-page contract they give you. But my other thing is, like, not to skip to the end, but when Samantha sleeps with Charlotte's date, I felt so upset about it, because I was like, now what are we going to do? Like, knowing that we know this group of friends for so long, and my guess is the next episode just starts, because, like, this was probably a pilot and it was, you know, I'm curious how much changed. I feel like plenty.
Because
Carrie stopped
this.
Talking to the camera, didn't she?
Well, she lasts longer than you remember, because I think collectively we have tried to sweep the camera, talking to camera thing under the rug.
It's crazy.
But I think it lasts until season two.
I see. They do it the whole first season.
Yeah. And
yeah,
I remember not like in my memory, it's always like, well, that's when things really take off. It's like she stops talking to camera. We've cleaned up our act a little bit, but I didn't hate that device. Mm-hmm. You know, watching it with fresh eyes.
I was really surprised by it, because that I didn't know that about the show, and it didn't seem like that was part of the conversation whenever people talked about the show. So I was very surprised. Like, the first time that she did it, I thought maybe it was kind of a mistake or something, or like a one-off, and then she did it so much more, like, towards the end of the episode, I didn't realize this was a part of the show. So I guess it's not.
The format becomes like she's writing her column, and it's bookended by
like
voiceovers,
that's what I associate,
and she's kind of narrating the
well, I do feel like they learned. I mean, you know, I'm just looking up. I meant to look up the director, so I'm doing that right now.
Oh, it's Susan Seidelman.
Yeah, and I'm like,
Desperately
dying to know
Seeking
what else she
Susan
did.
And okay. She-Devil.
I love She-Devil.
I knew you were going to say that. I just instinctively knew that is a gal movie.
Yeah, yeah.
I have ever seen one.
I think that... this show, and again, I guess like a Seinfeld or like a Friends or a show that just lasts and becomes part of the cultural, you know, atmosphere or ecosystem or whatever, they evolve because they get the chance to, I guess. Like, they stay on, people decide they love the characters or the world or whatever it is. And so it was kind of jarring to be like, oh yeah, this is how it started. And then it became this other thing. Yeah.
Although when we have our first sit down and we meet the girls properly, we have the quartet at, I think that's Lucky Chang's for Miranda's birthday. Mm-hmm. Like their POVs are pretty clear, and like they do stay pretty consistent to this day.
Yeah, it's basically like a single camera sitcom, right?
Yeah.
Like, they just are who they are, and they do the same thing over and over and over again. And even like when they grow, they almost like reset at the beginning of every episode.
Yeah. And Charlotte's, arguing for love, and Samantha's arguing for sex, and Miranda's kind of arguing that men are terrible, just arguing in general. And Carrie is a little bit of all of the above. But then they have this, it's interesting thinking about the like kind of pop feminism that's presented here, with Samantha has this speech about how, like, you know, women finally have the same power as men for the first time. We can have sex without getting attached. And I do think this was edgy for 1998, but it, in a weird way, it feels like, so that was something kind of new, but then the world kind of just stayed there, because it still feels like a lot of, not She-Hulk Attorney at Law, obviously, but a lot of shows are still kind of doing this thing where it's like, get this woman character, her thing is like, she doesn't want to get married. And executives are like, oh yeah, that'll blow their minds, baby.
It is corny in some way, or it's like, I don't know, not depressing, but like, you just sort of, I don't know. It was weird to have to think about those things. Like, but I think that it's true that these things never really, these conventions never, like, things come in and out of vogue, but these kind of traditional conventions never quite disappear.
Yeah.
About will you be married, or or what your expiration date is. That guy's like, then you marry a woman who's 35, and then what are you gonna do? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, and I was like, oh, I mean, I don't know. Like, go to Italy every year, I guess. I don't, you know what I mean? I don't know. Whatever it is, people do when they spend their lives together.
Go ahead, Matt.
No, go ahead, Gal.
I was going to say, overall, like, this feels like such a specific portrait of a specific sect of people in New York, because that I'm unfamiliar with, you know, like, well, first of all, I'm just very unfamiliar with New York. Raised in LA, not a big New York fan.
Hot take.
Shameful, really.
So this is... You know, this feels just very like, oh, this is a significant population in New York, but this isn't like representative of all of New York. Even I know that, a foolish West Coaster. But she kind of just makes these blanket statements about New York in general, as if it's this like monolith. And my question to you guys is, do New Yorkers really have breakfast at 7 a.m.?
That was pretty great. They got breakfast at 7, and then what was the thing after having breakfast at 7? Do you remember?
I don't remember. Mm-hmm. I didn't take notes.
I guess the thing about breakfast, the point of breakfast at 7 is like everybody's got to be at work.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know everyone's what I mean? Like busy. Everybody's got a packed schedule.
Everyone's got their eye on the tiger in this town.
Yes.
Yeah.
And everybody has to get on the subway and go to the office. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's what that is conveying. And New York definitely does, compared to LA, feel like a city where people have jobs. I mean, LA feels like absolutely no one has a job.
But then do people do
and it
stuff
felt that way when I moved there from the beginning, and then that never it hasn't went changed. Away. No, that feeling never went away, that it was like, so this coffee shop's just going to be full at like 11 or 2 or, you know, 3:30. Like, in, you know, New York has like rush hours. Like, everybody gets a bagel, then they go back to their desk. Then everybody gets lunch, then they go back to their desk. There's like different energy different times of
the
day.
And then everybody does stuff before they have to be at work too. Like, that seems like kind of the schedule too.
Oh, well, this isn't a conversation we should be having here. Jessica Gow does not like to wake up. And that is something I know about her personally.
It's 11 a.m. right now. What time did you wake up today, Gal?
I'm a normal now. I'm normal now.
No, so you get up at 8:30 right. or 9? That's what happens.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
I just never.
She had to in order to grow. She had to give up her mutation in order to.
Do you still party into the 2 and 3 a.m.s?
No, I usually like go to bed by 1.
That's still shockingly late.
That's shockingly early.
Oh,
for
that
me.
Was definitely my. That was my schedule for sure. The same.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I used to be a 4 or 5 a.m. person, and then I'd wake up at noon every day. So
that's what I am, but that's when I'm waking up.
At 4 or 5 a.m.?
I don't like this about myself.
Oh, yes.
Wait, you wake up at 4 or 5 a.m. in the morning?
Yes.
Oh, and yes. So do you go to bed at like 8?
I do try to shut things down in the 8s and 9s.
Wow.
It's tough. But I'm in a pickleball league right now, not to brag, and they play at 7, 8, sometimes 9 p.m. on Monday nights. And every week I'm like, am I going to quit? Can I do this? Because to drive to West Hollywood at 8 p.m. on a Monday night is so hurt. I don't know. No one cares about this. I'm sorry. I'm taking us into this territory. Wait, this is what
it's really Jessica's fault.
Folks, sunnier days are a-coming. Summer's right around the corner. We're all on our wellness journeys, and I can think of no better way to kickstart your new healthy routine than with Factor Meals. And right now, if you go to factormeals.com/likematt50 and use our code likematt50, you'll get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month while your subscription's active. So with Factor Meals, there are 35 different meal options, more than 60 add-ons to choose from every week, so you've always got new flavors to explore. You can make your day delicious from breakfast to dessert, everything in between. You'll stay fueled with easy, nutritious options. I'm talking filet mignon. I'm talking shrimp. I'm talking blackened salmon. And Factor Meals are ready in 2 minutes, so no shopping, no prepping, no cooking, no cleanup. Head to factormeals.com right now. Go to factormeals.com/likematt50 and use code likematt50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month. That's code likematt50 at factormeals.com/likematt50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active. You know, one of the many, many things I have in common with our Lord and Savior Oprah Winfrey is that I love bread. I do. I love it. It's my favorite thing. When they drop that basket on the table at a restaurant, I light up, I dive in, and then I go, oh no, don't have too many. What am I going to do? Because the carb fear can be very real. But luckily, Hero Bread is here with those same delicious favorites, but free of consequences or compromises, because they have remade carby, empty calorie bread products into fluffy, delicious versions that include no net carbs, 0 grams sugar, and fewer calories, plus protein and fiber. And right now, if you go to hero.co and use code LIKEMATT, you'll get 10% off your order. So whether your health goals are getting enough fiber or cutting down on sugar or adding more protein, or you want to find a way to make a delicious French toast or a breakfast sandwich that still fits in with those goals, it's all about the Hero Bread. So don't give up on being a breadhead. Hero Bread is offering 10% off your first order. Go to hero.co and use code LIKEMATT at checkout. That's LIKEMATT at hero.co. Because you can have your bread and eat it too.
No, reoriented the conversation around Los Angeles.
She always will.
Let's get back to New York.
Back to New York, the only city in the world. Back to New York.
And this is what really struck me about the difference between where the show started and where it is now, and what it grew to in the real heyday of the show, is that it became this story about how the real loves of your life are your friends. And it still is that in a way, and just like that. But like, that's not really there in this pilot. Her friends are great, but they're just sounding boards to talk about men.
Yeah, they're almost like case studies for her. Like, that's what it feels like. It feels, you know, she's as she says, a sexual anthropologist, and her friends are great case studies for her. Like, if I didn't know anything about the show and I just watched the pilot, like, that's what it feels like this show is. It's this sexual anthropologist who is using her friends to really study like human relationships and sexuality in 1998 New York for white people, you know?
It's also a lot of writing.
she does do a lot of writing.
You know what I mean? Like, it's no, but it's just a lot of monologuing.
Yeah.
Like there is so much voiceover and so much explanation in this show that I actually found myself, you know, I'm wanting more action, basically. Like, I bet you if you add up as much freeze frame talk over as there is these little vignettes, I bet they're like pretty neck and neck about how much screen time is like frozen. And that's when Miranda decided to take it uptown to figure out what did it, you know, the storybook nature of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't know. Maybe that gets better as it goes on, but it was a little hard not to follow, but you're just like, that's a lot of talking.
Yeah.
Like, everybody has big speeches. Mm-hmm. You know, these guys, all those on the rock climbing wall, it's like, that's a page and a half of dialogue.
Yeah.
You know,
when he's like, what every New York woman wants is Alec Baldwin.
I know, that gave me that scented shit. I was like, still.
Yeah.
I will say, I did not realize how pivotal. I don't think Chris Noth has gotten enough credit for what he brings to this show. I think that he is a pivotal part of selling the fantasy of this show, and that he is incredibly charming and is even more polished than Sarah Jessica, at least in this pilot. And he really is Manhattan. I didn't realize that it's like there's their Manhattan and he's this other Manhattan. Mm-hmm. He's like Prince Charming, obviously, you know, in his chariot.
Well, he quote the next Donald Trump.
Yeah, well, that was amazing.
Tough like, intro.
He's the next Donald, followed quickly by Ross Perot reference. And you're just like, what? I wrote a whole list of like, they're like, oh, Linda Fiorentino in The Last Seduction. I was like, why do people do this? Why do people name check movies? Unless it's going to be a movie from like Raiders of the Lost Ark or Star Wars. Like, do not name check contemporary films when you're writing something.
Did you know that? Would you have known the movie they were referencing, that Linda Fiorentino movie?
Yeah, I've seen it.
You have. I didn't.
Oh yeah.
This is
Linda Fiorentino had a very tight but sexy run in the early 90s. It was like The Last Seduction, like all the like four or five movies where she played this femme fatale. And then she was gone.
Well, and then she did Dogma.
Right. Mm. I mean, how wonderful.
This is my question for you, Gao, about
Kevin
Mr. Big.
Smith fan, Gao.
I was in high school.
He's probably a close personal friend.
Oh boy.
You guys love
comics.
He wishes he had your Superman one.
Oh boy.
That's right.
Oh boy. All right. Let's get back to Sex in the City.
That was a DC reference. I'm contractually obligated by DC to talk about Batman and Wonder Woman while I'm on this podcast.
Gao, what is your impression? I mean, obviously you've met Mr. Big in this and you saw him in the movie when he left her at the altar and they got back together. But as a newbie, what's your sense of him, the larger mythology, the meaning of Big? Do you know or can you predict what happens to him?
I was really, really surprised that he was in the pilot, like, because I knew that he was kind of the recurring, like, you know, guy that she's supposed to be with but couldn't make it work. And then, of course, having watched the movie, I knew that they got together. But I didn't realize this was a guy that had been seated in the pilot. Like, I always assumed this was just like the most popular love interest that was like introduced at some point in like the second or third season. And then it just became a recurring storyline. So it was very surprising. It was shocking that he was there.
I actually thought the same thing. It made me think maybe I didn't ever watch the debut of the show, that I just started watching it in the middle, you know, maybe middle of first season or I don't know what, but I was shocked that he was in the pilot too. I thought that he came along as one of her dates and they were like, oh, this is working. I didn't know that he was like really a really important part of the fabric of the show. The white whale. Mm-hmm. He's That's Moby right. Dick.
Although it was very weird, like that. The way they got together in the pilot, where he just drove up on the street, had his limo drive up on the street. They've never spoken to each other. I don't think they even like. I don't even know if he saw her at the club. So this pilot is telling me.
Did you not watch the first 20 minutes?
No.
Meet cute.
Yeah, but like, so you're telling me that
meet cute, and then he waves to her at the show.
Did he wave to her at the club? So
yeah, that's why he doesn't want to go downstairs with Samantha, because he's like, there's that girl I ran into and who had all the condoms.
I missed the wave. So then I was like, so this man just remembered this woman whose condoms he picked up on the street a few days ago, saw her walking up, like recognized her from like as a figure down the street from the back of his car, and then was like honk and pull up on that woman.
If you're going to do this sort of thing, we're going to have to revoke your WGA card.
Well,
that's
and also, well,
that.
Okay, fine. That's
you
all
can't
fine.
Just come
I
in here
it. It's a
and
fantasy.
Be mad about something that didn't happen.
But
okay?
Then
you have to deal with what happened.
But then their conversation in the car is bonkers.
This was your moment where you became a middle-aged woman, guy. I just saw it happen right before my very eyes. You started defending like a narrative that never happened, and you're like, I already felt that it happened in my body. We have to make it true.
This is my impression, guys. And that
she's
conversation
the cynic,
is
and he says to her, but it is the inverse of the whatever thesis statement or supposition of this pilot, which is all men are dogs. Women have to be more like men. Women are too soft. If you want to survive in this town, you got to be a predator, or you got to discard men, and you have to treat them the way they treat women. And New York is a cynic's town where people wake up at 7 a.m. and have a black cup of coffee and then eat each other alive, or whatever the show is saying. Mm-hmm. And he is the next Donald Trump, which God forbid, but he, in that moment in 1998, means he's the guy that's going to be, he's the most eligible bachelor.
Yeah, he's aspirational.
Is what they're saying.
Yes.
And then we catch him in this intimate moment. And I, by the way, I'm like, for anyone that hasn't seen this pilot, I'm way overselling the quality of this execution and this narrative. But And he says
their chemistry's great, though.
Incredible chemistry. And he says to, and he could, I think, have chemistry with, and look, I know he has maybe, maybe not become problematic in recent years, but strictly on this performance, he could have chemistry with like a phone booth. You know what I mean? He just, he is doing so much work to sell this Prince Charmingness of whatever, or doing very little work, whatever the case is. But he basically says to her, oh, well, you've never been in love. And that's the thing that pops the balloon of like all of her sexual anthropology. Mm-hmm. And in many ways is what sets her up for the very rest of all of the seasons of all of everything ever, which is like, if you can just admit to yourself that you're a romantic, like if you can hold on to that, then you don't have to become a cynic. And that life as a woman in New York or whatever in your 30s is this battle between becoming a cynic and a romantic. And you've got Charlotte on one hand and Miranda on the other hand of the spectrum. And that, you know, they're like the muses, the like Greek muses. And then Samantha,
right
down the middle, just representing desire, want, id, whatever that is.
Yeah. I mean, the second half of that conversation. And then of course when she leaves the car and asks if he's ever been in love and he's like, absolutely. Like it's a perfect like thesis statement for the show. The first half of the conversation in the car and how they get
and
to
it's
that
a challenge.
Point.
She now has to make him fall in love with her.
Yeah.
And beat whoever came before.
Sure. Yes. But the first half of that conversation was cuckoo bananas. I wish I had written
What happens in the first half?
I wish I had written it down, but it was just very like.
Well, Gal, what do you think happened?
Yeah, let's hear your version.
It was like.
She's like, and then he says to her, do you want a bite of this bagel? And I was like, what is he offering her a slice of pizza for at 3 o'clock in the morning?
It kind of felt that. I mean, it was like this very weird. Oh. Like, yes.
72nd and 3rd?
Yeah.
He says, can I give you a ride? She says 72nd and 3rd. I thought she lived in the West Village. The Sex and the City apartment is on 10th Street.
It's on Perry Street, but she doesn't. But Carrie always lived.
On the Upper West Side?
That apartment is meant to be on the Upper West Side.
Okay.
Although I don't remember it being that far north, but I feel like they did stick with that.
So, okay, sorry, Gal. What was the first half of the conversation?
It felt like they had jumped into the middle of a conversation when, again, these two people have never spoken to each other before. Like,
I know. The first thing he says is, what
are
you doing?
That is true.
Yeah.
She's
yes.
like,
it's so
like,
insane.
What a weird question.
Yeah. This is the first maybe thing he's ever said to him.
Maybe they had I wonder if they had a scene that got cut out.
It has to, because it's so
like
bonkers.
A scene in the club.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then they were like, it's too weird if he talks to her in the club and Samantha hits on him.
Yes. Because it definitely.
So like, let Samantha hit on him and let them not talk in the club.
Yeah. Like this whole scene felt very much.
That's very true.
It felt very much, because even the way he drove up, the way she recognizes him, like it felt very much like they had some sort of quick, brief spark. Like before this and you know, between this and the sidewalk condoms, like it felt like they had some sort of sparkling moment.
I don't think they needed to use Samantha the way that they did in this pilot. Like, I think that they really have, maybe this, I'm so curious if this is like the root of all of her complaint about, I don't know that much. I know obviously there's bad blood everywhere, but I don't know exactly why. And maybe it comes down to just like personality stuff, meaning like we're just never going to be friends. Like, we're both good at what we do, but we don't do things the same way. Like, it could be that simple. I don't know. Matt will know, of course. But it does feel like some other lady could hit on him and he could say no, or nobody could hit on him. Mm-hmm. And he could still see her at the end of the night and be like, you know, hey, I was, you know, like that he was kind of waiting in the wings a little bit. And then she goes and sleeps with Charlotte's date too. And you're just sort of like,
They do Samantha a little bit dirty here because, and you are onto something because, you know, allegedly, there are just like the personality differences, those kind of beefs and the money beefs, but there is also Kim Cattrall being upset about the way her character was going to be used in what was going to be the third movie. And it had to do with, I think it was like Miranda's son sends her a dick pic or it was something that she was like, this is too far. Like give Samantha some dignity. And that is a problem with this. both of those things together are tough. Either she can hit on Big and get rejected, or she can sleep with Charlotte's date, you know, accidentally, but mm-hmm. both is really tough. I'm curious about the last shot of her after she goes home with this guy and then he like, mm-hmm. you know, drops mm-hmm. off the frame and she kind of like tosses her hair and has this look on her face that I'm like, I can't tell if we are meant to read this as like, it's the emptiness yeah. of her yes. being like, oh God, another one night. Or is it just yeah. horny pleasure?
Yeah.
I think it's, I had the exact same question and I thought it felt like both things actually, which was like, she feels she's espousing this whole big idea, but at the end of the day, she feels empty about, you know, like mm-hmm. she's chasing something else that's personal, mm-hmm. whatever that yeah. is, yeah. needing to go home with people, whatever that is for her. But then the sort of pleasure, the actual just physical pleasure of the act takes over kind of thing. And she sort of pushes it out of her mind.
Yeah. She kind of shakes it off.
It, yeah. It's a pretty good performance though, weirdly for a
mm-hmm. yeah.
strange $10 pilot.
Yeah. I,
and is she more famous than Sarah Jessica when they start this?
No, Sarah Jessica was already, you know, what was it? Her Square Pegs and Girls Just Want to Have Fun and yeah, LA she, Story, I yeah, think had already happened mannequin. Right now, right?
Oh, yeah.
Kim Cattrall was Mannequin.
She was Mannequin. Mm-hmm.
It's true.
And she was in Big Trouble in Little China, one of the greatest movies ever.
Oh, right.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
God, I'm still holding out for a reconciliation. Now, Chaffin, I'm sure you are.
Do you think they ever got along? That's my question, though. Like, do you think that, like, I don't mean, I don't know anything about it. I'm still caught up on the fact that Big makes $2 million a year and that Manolo's are $400.
I do
oh, no,
remember.
Not to Bill. Sorry, Big doesn't make $2 million. The guy who went to see the $40 million
the cold open guy.
Tim, right?
Yeah, makes $2 million.
Oh, by the way, Tim is 42. 1998. Age 42 was rough. Cause that like, cause when you look at that guy, you're like, oh, like that was when was, like everybody
he was on a soap opera that I would occasionally watch after school. And I was like, oh my God, that's that guy from As the World Turns. And
it, oh, you were, yeah. Is that CBS or?
It wasn't one of my, it was like if I was waiting for something else to come up, yeah, you know, yeah, flip yeah. around kind of thing.
I was an NBC kid.
General Days Hospital. Of Our Lives, Days of Our Lives, General Hospital, yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
So I'm sure Chaffin is at least like plugged into the conversation around And Just Like That, whether you, how oh, much, yeah. regardless watched, of how much of it you watch.
Oh, I watched the first season, but I haven't watched the second season.
Okay. So,
and
Gal,
I watched every minute of it.
Yeah. Well, I did too.
Yeah.
As you know.
And I'll never have those minutes back.
Gal, what do you know about the show and what do you, well, what do you know about the show from actually hearing it? What do you know about the show just from your own weird, now middle-aged lady instincts sort of making up what happens?
Gasp.
How
what Chaffin referred
both.
To.
How dare you both?
You're younger than me. I'm allowed to.
Yes, but only in years.
Only
I mean, she's
years?
That's right.
She's complaining about things that didn't happen. She's creating narratives that.
That's what I want. I want her to like
yeah.
create some narratives around it, just like that.
She's
going to
hit someone with her
happens?
Purse later.
Well,
today.
I'm sorry if I'm analyzing the script as a professional screenwriter.
No, you weren't, Gal. That's that is not what. This is what led to me revoking your WGA card.
It's the implication of what is on screen, because then it creates this backstory that you're that I can't help but be aware of. Okay, so I feel like I knew a lot about the show because I knew all the four women and their personality types and their approaches to life. But kind of watching this pilot and seeing like where it all began. One thing about the four women that really struck me is I understand why Samantha's friends with Carrie. I understand why Miranda and Carrie are friends. I kind of don't understand why Charlotte is in this friend group. Like that's the only one where I'm like, where I can't yeah. imagine like how she and Carrie became friends and how she got incorporated in this friend group and how, you know what I mean? Like she kind of felt like the odd member out to me.
I think that's also one of the weird things about the show that bothered me when I watched it, even at the time, which was, it was totally unbelievable to me that they were all friends with each mm-hmm. other.
Yes.
So it's like, cause the whole thing is like, everyone's got everybody's back. If the whole, every episode is like, somebody's got an event uptown and someone's got an event downtown and they're having brunch and you got to go to this person's art opening and you got to go to this person's event, and everybody always shows up for everybody. And there's a lot of strife. And even in Just Like That, Matt, still there, this idea that like these friends need to show up for each other and like whatever it means to be a lifelong friend as a woman, which my God, the pressure of that, you know? But I never understood a lot of the satellite. That always felt untrue to me, this a lot of the satellite friendships, like why Miranda would show up for Charlotte or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, that dynamic, I truly don't understand. Like, those two personalities are so opposite, but in a way that isn't like opposite, it's a track, is more like, not, there are two ends of a spectrum that want to meet in the middle, you know?
Well, you can understand why Charlotte would be friends with Miranda, but you can't really understand why Miranda would be friends with Charlotte.
And also, and if Carrie is kind of the center of these friendships, you know, like I don't even understand why Carrie and Charlotte are friends, you know? So it's very weird.
Sacrilege what you're saying. I mean, Charlotte's evolution into and just like that is so beautiful. Like what she... You're right, Chaffin. It's a lot to live up to, the idea of being that kind of lifelong friend. But man, she...
Do they in the show explain like how they each have become friends? Like how they, what their, the origin of each of their friendships are?
I don't know if they explain how they ever met. Do they?
They do at some point, and I don't really remember it. And I think, and then it's also the it gets a little muddled because then there was the prequel show, Carrie Diaries, and they, I think, changed the...
They like retconned a bunch of
the rules. Yeah. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. If you've ever listened to this podcast, you know I'm a huge fan of therapy. It's a big part of my life. Therapy is where I process a lot of the things that we talk about on this podcast. You know, stress about aging or career or navigating a breakup, whether it be romantic or an issue with friends. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, suited to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Another reason I love therapy is that it helps me to recharge my social battery, especially as we're ramping up for summer. We're all going to be seeing a lot more friends and family. Some of us have, you know, some introverted tendencies. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/likemat today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/likemat.
Oh, did they make them like Babysitter Club Prince?
Samantha was in the show. So it was in that world, Samantha and Carrie were friends when they were in their
20s. Oh, that's
weird. Don't remember, but Charlotte's a perfect friend.
That's
the bottom line. Yeah. That's not canon.
That's not,
thank you.
Yeah. Carrie Diaries is not looking canon. For. Yeah.
When, at this point in the show, they're in their mid-30s, late-30s?
I think so. I think early, and Samantha's older.
I think
older,
they must be, yeah, so this is... 98. So that's what, 25 years ago?
Yeah. And they're 55 now.
Are they now?
Yeah. Just like that. So
she makes some joke about, I had sex with him when I was 24. Mistake I made.
Yeah.
The guy who has, by the way, candy corn teeth.
Yeah. The last time she had a mistake was when this one. So I'm assuming.
So my guess was she's 32 or something like that.
Yes. Yes. And by that guy, Kurt Harrington, forgot all about him. See, I'm always looking for people we can bring back for and just like that, original characters, because we've like kind of tapped out a little bit there. And he's one of them. Like the fact that there was kind of already a Mr. Big when she met Mr. Big, this guy, Kurt Harrington, that we never heard of again, was somebody she had like multiple flings with. And he was the toxic guy she kept coming back to before she met the new toxic guy. By the way, Gao, I'm not a Mr. Big fan, and I don't know if you were available to have it spoiled for you what happens with Carrie.
Oh, I heard all about it.
If you'd like
it.
To, you know.
Yeah. I heard all about it.
We're and talking good about riddance. That he passes away. Is that what
that's
we're talking
right.
about?
Yeah. That's right. And I was happy to see him go.
Really?
Yes.
What was it?
I apologize to listeners that have heard me say it so many times.
The character or the actor?
I didn't even get involved in the actor backstory.
So what
I was
is it
already,
you hate about him?
Well, that was what it was interesting about watching this.
You're an Aiden?
In the pilot, I did love him. And uh-huh. for a long time, I wasn't an Aiden, but like now in my older years and, mm-hmm. you know, being with Carrie
it's an easier
as long as
life.
I have,
Aiden's
it's
an easier
just
life.
A better life. Here's the thing that really killed me with Big in the end was the reason that he died, he's riding the Peloton instead of going to Charlotte's daughter's piano recital mm-hmm. with Carrie. And because they have been friends for 30 years, and these are like basically Carrie's godchildren. Obviously, she's going to Lily's piano recital. And it was also treated as if, like, obviously he's not going. It was just, he represents, we all know these, sorry to say it, but straight men, husband types, who they're sort of like, I don't need to show up for your friends. Like, I mean, your friends and their silly little social activities. And it's like, actually, yeah, you do. Like Carrie does not have a family. That is her family.
That's mm-hmm. a very good point.
And you know that she had to just accept that this was the husband that like didn't give a fuck about any of that. It was like get out.
Carrie doesn't have a family because they never wrote her one, or because
they never wrote her one.
What do you think?
I asked Michael Patrick King about this, and he doesn't like talk about it because he doesn't want to open that Pandora's box, but. It's intentional that we never really learn who Carrie's parents are. Does she have any siblings? Any of that stuff. There's one passing reference to her mom and dad at one point, but you don't really learn anything.
But that mm-hmm. feels very much like the mythology of the New York transplant, you know, like this whole fantasy of New York. You go to
New
York,
very true.
Shed who you were, like your hometown, your home state doesn't matter. Like you're this new person and now you're a quote unquote New Yorker. Like that's like, every transplant story in New York, you know, and then their life only exists within the bubble of New York now. They weren't people before then.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was his explanation too.
So the reason I had asked what their ages were was, so I assumed that they were in their mid-30s. I thought they were all probably like 30, between 35, 36-ish, you know, and mm-hmm. and I was like, being in your mid-30s and going to clubs, like,
yeah,
I would never. I want to sit at home. Like, 100%.
But it's a New York club. Yeah. It's a different thing. And it's a New York life. You know, people still go out. I mean, it's honestly Real Housewives. It's the Regency. Like, chaos is the Regency. It's the place where they know they're going to run into a certain kind of people. And they're all committedly single mm-hmm. at this point. So, you know,
that's what you
gotta
go.
Yeah, I gotta chase that tail somewhere.
This is pre-apps life.
When is the last time
yes,
either of you were in
life.
A club?
Oh gosh, like on purpose or because there was like a premiere there?
Like on purpose. Well, yeah. I guess if you got dragged there for something, that counts.
For me, only
dragged, Matt. I was starring.
For me, only a few years ago, and I spent the entire time seated.
Yeah, that's waiting right. to go, waiting for them to turn the music down, Grandma.
Oh, would have loved like headphones uh-huh. or something. Noise-canceling headphones would have been wonderful.
This is before they invented the two-way AirPods, where you can listen to a podcast and still be aware when someone asks you if you want to drink.
Yes, absolutely. And then just grouchily, like, drinking the bottle service alcohol that would normally not be my brand, you know?
Yeah. Bottle service, the world's greatest invention. The biggest,
my God.
Like the original scam.
Yeah.
That it's everybody, literally shocking. The emperor has no clothes and people just, they love it.
Yeah.
They love it.
I went to Vegas last summer with a few girlfriends that you guys know. And I was like, I was tasked with like, the club night. We're gonna have one night where we go out to a gay club, and I was like, well, we're clearly gonna need like a VIP section at bottle service. Like, I can't have these ladies. Like, we're no longer in our 30s. I can't have them waiting in line and mixing and mingling.
What if June Diane like, twists an ankle?
Exactly.
Yeah, and we're gonna need somewhere to sit. Not everybody, you know, some people were in kitten heels.
So I had to pre-order and pre-approve with all of them. I was like, guys, we're going to bottle service is astronomically expensive, but like, I think we all agree it's worth it. Like, it's going to be so crazy in there. Yeah. It's going to be thousands of people. And like, we need some protection.
That's what we need. We need David's credit card.
Exactly. We come in to
not that everyone in your group can't afford their own bottle service. I'm just saying.
Absolutely. I just would prefer for David to pay for it.
Yeah. Everybody would rather David pay for it. Everybody else is working hard out there for their bucks, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. And we come into a bar with maybe 10 people. Very small. Very small. And there are some, like, they're not even closed off booths, but there is a roped off booth with all of these bottles. And it was actually humiliating. We couldn't have been more on display. There were more of us in this quote unquote VIP section than there were in the entire bar.
Right. It's the old improv rule. Do you do a show? You have to do a show. There have to be as many people on stage as there are in the audience in order to do a show. But on the other hand, that club lived to be open another day because of your bottle service.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You covered the rent that month.
SJP, just an absolute star then, now, always. Really struck by just her beauty and her power, even then.
And her lack of highlights in the pilot.
Mm-hmm. That's right. A lot of saxophone in this episode.
So much saxophone.
So much saxophone and so much slow-mo.
And mist machines in the meatpacking, on the cobblestones of the meatpacking.
Lots of indoor smoking, that era too.
Yes.
I do love how 1998 it is. It was very, very fun to like visit 1998.
Oh, I was smoking in every club in New York in 1998. Did have braces at the time. Smoking with braces in my mouth.
That's incredible.
Did you ever get tobacco caught under a, you know?
Oh, I'm sure I did. Yeah, I was
What do they
nightmare.
Call the things that hold braces on? I can't remember.
I don't know.
Like the pegs that hold a brace on, but anyway.
Yeah, and I got the clear ones because I thought that'll make it less obvious, but then they get stained if you drink coffee and smoke cigarettes. It was disgusting. Yeah. Chaffin, I'm in no way trying to, you know, trick you into doing a Rana voice, but I'm just curious how you
would... Doesn't take much.
I just am dying to know how you would describe even her take on Sex and the City.
Rana's take on Sex and the City?
Yeah.
It's a good question, actually.
She's probably, well, I guess, I mean, she's ageless. I don't want to shock
everyone into knowing that I don't immediately know everything. That there are moments where people say, what do you think Rana would think about this? And I'm like,
I just assumed it had come up that people have been squawking about it.
Well, Rana has talked about And Just Like That a little bit and talked about, you know, because she likes to talk about what's happening. You know, Rana's secret being that somehow she's, you know, an older woman, but very plugged into what's happening now. And that's why she has so many young friends like Jessica Gao.
Mm-hmm. Even though Jessica Gao acts older than her.
Right. Well, that's why they work. The secret. It's the yin and the yang of the relationship. I think that there is you got to hand it to the show. It's not that whatever happens culturally around the show, meaning it's of its era, et cetera, has kind of nothing to do with the show, meaning that that's just the time that the show was written in. And so you are that people were living in. You know, you can't be like, oh my God, it's so dated. Da, 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 da. It's like, that is what the time that the show was written in. And I think you do have to hand it to the show because I do think, for better or worse, it gave a whole generation of women a little bit of like of wind beneath their sails about their independence and their ability to live a certain life and choice. And I think that that is more obvious probably outside of New York than it is in New York. And it is why shows that take place in New York, I think, are appealing to other people and why literally every woman on The Real Housewives, you mean like you can draw a straight line from the types of Sex in the City to the characters on Real Housewives and you realize, oh my gosh, these people are just actually living out their fantasy. Like Erica Jane just thinks she's Samantha.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And Kyle, for sure, like, feels like she missed the casting call for Sex and the City. You know, like, I mean, in her mind, where she was like, did you know I got close on Charlotte? You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure she's had that conversation. And so in that sense, it is a really feminist and liberating exercise in some way. But I just think that it was like, this is another way to do it. And here's an example. And the men in my life are just going to have to like sit up and take it.
Yeah.
And I think that that was a culturally important shift for a lot of women who didn't know that that was like, that there was like another, a third path.
Or just one that was spoken so directly, you know, wasn't like, you know.
Say what you want.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't take what you don't want. You don't have to. You can if you want. And also I think maybe the show actually has a, maybe this is just like a personal thing, but the show has an interesting relationship with shame. Which is that it doesn't make you, there is no shame to the way that people behave. There is like sometimes regret or remorse or, but they always get a chance pretty much to make it right. Carrie will struggle over an episode or two about like fixing something that she maybe feels like she didn't do quite right in her life, either by her friends or her choices or whatever. But I think that, I don't think women are ever shamed on this show for doing exactly what they want to do. And I think that that is very liberating. Am I misremembering? Well said.
Not at all.
Probably.
My last question for you.
I pulled a real gow. That was real. That was how to gow is what that was. Just say whatever you want. Don't even, and text while you're watching the show.
That's how to gow, baby.
Just transfer your bank transfers around while you're watching the show and buy a new purse on Rebag while you're watching the show.
Yes. Finance criminal gal. That's how she does it.
I am obsessed with both of you, the Jessicas Chaffin and Gal. Thank you so much for being here. Your cameras and sound went off just in time for the end of the show. I have no idea if you can still hear me, but
we can.
What?
Oh, you can. But totally I can't see you anymore.
It's totally normal.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, that's all that matters. Yeah. Great. well, I see you. And most importantly, I feel you, and just very grateful for your time.
Thank you so much for reuniting us. Yes. We've had a feud for the last.
She knows what
we're the real Kim Cattrall and the real the real
that's
SJP
right.
here.
We're doing a whole other podcast about this.
Do we have to choose Sarah Jessica because she has Jessica in her name? Do you think? Yeah.
At least partially. We have to give her an extra
point. Side with her.
Like whatever the pros and cons.
If it's 50-50, the point goes to SJP.
Yes, of course.
What if both of you were named Kim? Kim Chaffin.
They don't name people Kim anymore, do they? Except for Kimberly Akimbo. That's the only person they name Kim now, right?
Yeah, are there babies named Kim? Imagine your friend has a baby and they're like, this is Kimberly.
It's horrible.
Wow.
Horrible. Meet my daughter, Kimberly. I met a woman the other day who I loved, and her name was Jody. And I was like, they don't do that anymore. There is no more Jody.
There is no more Jody.
I don't know. No. Jody Comer's pretty young. Like, you know, it wasn't that long ago.
Jody who?
Comer.
Huh.
Oh, but she's English. That's another thing.
Oh, we're talking about exclusively American Jodies.
And she's Jodie.
Oh boy. Oh
yeah,
boy.
That's very
somehow
chic.
I
will say I do love a male Jody. It completely changes
very
the name.
Country.
It can like a female Jody and a male Jody are two very different types of people.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. True.
Back to
I'm
this.
So glad we got I'm so glad that we got that in at the end of that was
yes but okay fine.
Finally we were able to push our agenda. Yeah.
But to close out this podcast, I will say this did make me go, you know what? Maybe I'll watch the show now. Like after watching that pilot, I was like, I would watch more.
Then my work here is done.
It made me wonder if I was going to watch the next one to see like how it developed and where it went a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, if you do, I hope you'll come back and talk about it because what use is doing anything if you don't create content out of it? You know?
Matt, I'm more than familiar with how hard it is to book guests on a podcast. Okay. I tell everybody they can come back after they're on too, but
I was only never I told the day, that I could
the
come
day
back.
Will come where, the day will come where I'll be desperate. It'll be April 11th and I'll need somebody for April 17th, you know? I know.
And by the way, I'll be there.
I would love to have both of you back on the show.
And that's our show. Please do give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and follow us on Instagram at And Just Like Matt Pod. And Just Like Matt is a World of Wonder production created and hosted by me, Matt McConkie. Our executive producer is Renee Colvert. Our associate producer is Jess Walensky. And our audio engineer is Justin Mattson. Many thanks to Michael Pressman and everyone at World of Wonder.